one of the things that we had to do in this business is that we had to roll up our sleeves and get to work to get that foundation of clients and cash flow so that then we could enter into that scale phase with a budget.
Welcome to the Influence and Scale podcast, where content creators, marketers, and entrepreneurs learn how to increase their influence and scale their business using content marketing. My name is Tyler Basu, and alongside my business partner, Chuck Anderson, we'll be sharing proven strategies to help you grow your audience, create great content, and generate more traffic, leads, and sales for your business. Thanks so much for joining us. Now let's dive in. Welcome. Tyler Basu here with my partner, Chuck Anderson. We're from Influencer Studio. The theme for the call today, for the training today, is scaling your business, and specifically when to use content marketing to help scale your business. Chuck, can you hear me okay? You can hear
loud
me
and clear.
We're good.
Loud
to go.
And clear.
Awesome. So before we dive in, just a quick backstory as to why we want to cover this topic and start the year by talking about scaling. And for me anyway, it's because somebody asked me, I put a post on Facebook earlier this month. Can't remember what I was sharing, but somebody commented and they said, what's your word for 2020? You know, this is shortly after the new year and everybody's got a theme or a goal or whatever for the new year. So somebody said, what's your word for 2020? And I said, my word's scale, which to me means growth, like faster growth for our business this year and all the things that we need to do to make that happen. And today I want to highlight why that wasn't my word a year ago. Like if you had asked me at the beginning of 2019 when Chuck and I had just started Influencer Studio, why we weren't talking about scaling, you know, on day one of creating our business. Like, because there was some foundational stuff we had to go through. So that's what we're touching on today is if you do in fact want to scale your business and create much faster growth for whatever type of business you've got, and if you're planning on utilizing content marketing and, you know, creating content and running more ads and generating more attention for your business and generating more leads and sales online for your business to help you scale faster, what are the things that you want to have in place before you focus on scaling and prioritize scaling? And we're going to speak from experience because our first year in running this agency together, we weren't doing the things that you do when you're trying to scale something. We were doing all the foundational stuff, all the behind the scenes stuff, getting a lot of, you know, a lot of pieces in place to make us ready for scaling. And now in 2020, you know, we have those things in place. We have those foundations in place. So we're ready for faster growth now, but we didn't, there are things that we didn't focus on to get this far. Chuck, is there anything you want to add to that before we actually dive into what some of these fundamental things are?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point because I think in the enthusiasm, starting a new business, starting a new company, and also going through and listening to this podcast or that webinar or attending this event and getting all the training, that it feels like these are the things you need to be doing. You need to jump right in and you need to be running ads and you need to be doing content and you need to be doing all of these things. And those are things definitely you do in the scaling phase, but when you're first starting out, you may not have the budget for that. You may not have your message completely dialed in. And so it's a bit premature. And so one of the things that we had to do in this business is that we had to roll up our sleeves and get to work to get that foundation of clients and cash flow so that then we could enter into that scale phase with a budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it felt ironic, or it felt, you know, there's a little bit of imposter syndrome, at least on my part, because we are a content marketing agency. Like we help businesses create and promote their content to get more attention and get more leads and get more sales using content marketing. And yet immediately after launching this agency and creating this agency, that's not what we leaned on to get our first clients. And, you know, I've seen the same thing exists with advertising agencies. They're running ads. Like if you just started your own agency, you might not even have a budget for your own ads yet. So even though you can provide, even though you can do advertising for somebody else, you're not ready to do it for yourself. And so we just had to work through that. You know, we just had to work through drinking our own Kool-Aid, because we turn away clients that we don't think are ready to focus on content marketing yet. And for our first year in business, we were basically that business. So we didn't actually produce a lot of content as much as we wanted to. Chuck, I think you and I maybe published a dozen different videos throughout 2019, couple thousand bucks on ads tops. Like we weren't relying on that stuff to get our first dozen or so clients.
Yeah, that's not per month. That's like for the whole year. I mean, we had a half a dozen videos. We were never really happy with them. And but it was really just kind of like finding the voice, finding the message. But really, where our attention was finding clients through our, you know, warm market. Turns out we were connected to a, you know, a lot of great sources of clients where we didn't really need the advertising and all of that, where we could, you know, get started actually working with clients, getting some results, doing the work, and building a team, which was a very important thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, it took us almost 6 months, I would say, to train the team of, you know, the handful of freelancers that have been helping us on the client fulfillment side of things. So that was a process in itself. But anyway, and we're going to touch on the things that we did focus on, because now we're at a place where, you know, we've got a handful of clients on retainers. We're collecting over five figures a month in revenue. So we've got our plan now in place to scale to multiple six figures, and hopefully by the end of the year, close to six figures a month in revenue. And the things that are going to get us there are not the things that we did that got us this far to where we are today. So if that's you, if you're in the early stages of your business, you're not yet reaching six figures in annual revenue, and you're hearing a lot of conflicting advice. People are telling you, you got to do ads, you got to do funnels, you got to do webinars, you got to do speaking, or whatever the case is, you got to be on every social platform. Like, we want to help you avoid the overwhelm that comes with feeling like you have to do everything, and just touch on those main things that you do need to focus on. If you focus on these things we're about to talk about, you can get to your six figures in annual revenue, and then you'll have the budget for more content creation, more ads, more experiments, more traveling, going to events, things like that, things that will help you grow faster. But in that first year, or even if you've been in business for longer than a year, but you still haven't hit six figures, it's probably because you're trying to do too much. So Chuck, we'll hit on the things that we focused on. First of all, we had to get really clear on who our target market was. I think the first half of the year, I probably, you know, went through 20 or 30 calls with potential clients before we really honed in on the type of client that we most like working with. So Chuck, why don't you touch on that a little bit, the importance of getting that clarity on who is the right client for your business.
Yeah, and you know, there's no amount of brainstorming, there's no amount of market research that's really gonna prepare you for this. I mean, you know, we tried to do that, and we thought that we were getting into the market and offering the types of services that people really wanted. But as it turned out, the best market research we could possibly do is to actually work with clients. And mm-hmm. So we went out there, we made an offer, we brought on some clients, and we worked with them. And then as we did that, we gained more experience. We got more ideas. We talked to them. We asked them questions. Hey, what do you need? What do you value most? And if you fast forward to today, the services that we're offering today are completely different than the ones that we offered in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, we started off, you know, building webinar funnels for people and recording their webinars. Yep. I can't remember the last time we recorded a webinar for somebody. So we do a lot of video content and a lot of content marketing. But in the beginning, we had to start working with those clients to really discover the needs, discover our skills, discover what we liked doing, what we didn't like doing, and really what got the best results for clients. And that has evolved. We would not have figured that out if we weren't working directly with people.
Yeah, for sure. And we tell everyone that we do work with, like, we tell them to get that clarity on who their perfect client is. Like, we work with them to create this client persona or profile. And if you're in the early stages, like, those are all just assumptions. Like, if you haven't worked with a ton of clients yet, you can you do your best to articulate who you think is the best client, but until you work with a bunch of people and learn from the experience of working with them and helping them, that's when you get way more clear on who the right client is. Maybe it's they're in a certain stage of their business. Maybe it's that they're in a certain industry, or it's a very specific outcome that you help them with versus, you know, this menu of possible outcomes you could help them with. It takes working with some clients to get that clarity. So I would say almost a 6-month process for us, with working with, you know, in a one-on-one and as a service provider capacity, to probably 8 to 10 people before we started to see the patterns of the ones that we liked working with the most, and the ones that were the best suited for our services. And that's component number two, is really honing in on a product or a service that solves the problem of that ideal client that you like working with. Chuck, I know that you sent out a few proposals last year, and you hopped on some sales calls, but for the most part, I think I'd probably did the majority of the sales calls. And then like we regrouped, you know, after all of these different proposals were in the pipeline and after certain clients were enrolled, and we kept going over our pricing and changing the deliverables. And like we refined and changed our offer, sometimes a significant change, multiple times, maybe half a dozen times. We changed our pricing. We changed the way we sent a proposal, the way we positioned it. Made a complete turnaround from how we started 2019 with doing just those webinar builds as one-time projects, to finding a way to serve somebody on a monthly basis, on a recurring basis. Like what's an ongoing service we can provide? So that was fundamental number two, was creating an offer, that's actually getting some traction and that has a high conversion rate when you present it to the right person. Is there anything you want to add to that, the topic of creating a compelling offer?
Well, you know, to echo some of the things you said, I mean, one of the ways that we created a compelling offer is by starting to make offers. And yeah, some of them in the beginning weren't that great. And,
yeah,
you know, you can't always be preparing to prepare, right? You've got to get out there. You've got to roll up your sleeves and you got to make an offer. Yeah. A great mentor of mine used to say, you know, step up to the plate and swing the bat, right? And you can't be scared about that. So whatever you've got today, whatever you've got to offer, offer it. You win the client, that's great. You work with them, you're going to learn very, very quickly. You know, how do I make this proposal better? Is this the client that I should be working with? Am I getting them great results?
Yep.
And if not, what do I need to do that? And I think one of the things that we've done really well is that we've questioned that after every client. We look at, you know, what are the similarities between these clients and what are the differences? And then which ones of them do we want to clone, mm-hmm, and which ones do we maybe don't want to take on that kind of project again in the future?
Yep.
And so that proposal just keeps getting better and better and better. But, you know, you have to make that first one, you have to get that first client, and then make the decisions from there.
And pricing is a part of that too. Like there, you know, step one of creating that compelling offer is you got to hone in on what's the thing that you can do for somebody that helps them get the result they want. And then what's the right price? You know, what price can you actually pull that off with? What price gives you enough revenue to provide a great service and give you the profit margin you need and be able to grow your team and reach your and scale your business and reach your goals? So, you know, the first couple, when we made the switch from doing those one-off webinar funnel builds, and we made a switch to providing ongoing content repurposing and promotion services, the first couple of proposals I sent out were really low priced. And we did that on purpose because we were essentially pre-selling. I think, in fact, the way that we got those first few clients was I posted on social and I said, hey, if we provide this service, would you want it? We're thinking of, you know, providing this. And a bunch of people said, yeah. I said, okay, great. We'll give you like the best pricing we can just to like build this, you know, because we're going to have to now train our team to provide this, and we're going to have to work through our processes and our costs to pull this off. And so those first couple clients, we realized after the fact that they weren't actually very profitable for us. Like I think we maybe broke even on the first couple of clients at that lower price point, but we got to train our team in that process. We got to learn from the feedback from that client. And so we made those changes and then raised our price accordingly. And I think we've raised our prices probably 3 or 4 times since then. But that's part of it. That's part of getting the right offer, is honing in on the right price point, and also knowing that certain prices attract certain types of clients. So when you work your way up in price point, the expectations are higher, but you end up working with a client that has a bigger budget, because that's, you know, that's the price point they're shopping in, versus somebody that's on a very tight budget. They're going to be more price sensitive. So just going up in price has also changed kind of the size of the business that we work with, that we've been working with as a client. We've been taking on some bigger and bigger businesses and some 7-figure businesses with the last few proposals we've sent out. That's been pretty cool to see that evolution, not just in our pricing, but in the caliber of the stage of growth that the client is in at, when they can afford those prices too.
One of the things with pricing is that if you set it too low, you're going to attract clients who are either not at the stage of business that you are best suited to help them with. There also might be a mindset issue as well, because they're not willing to spend more, or they don't see the value of spending more. Yep. And, you know, we actually have an easier time fulfilling on clients who have paid us more than the clients who paid us less, even though we provide a very similar service yep. to them. And, you know, we don't longer do it at the lower price point, but when we priced it right, and I don't mean pricing like every, you know, as much as you possibly can for it. I mean, fair mm-hmm. and you're providing good value, because, you know, one of our missions is we don't just want a client for 2 or 3 months. We want a client for long term. And so I think they have to be happy with it. But when we charge the right pricing, what we found was we were able to do more for them. We were able to be there more for them. We weren't so worried about, hey, did we sell enough, you know, to cover the bills this month? We could actually be there for them. And that's huge. And one of the things that happens when you don't charge enough is that you're always worrying about, where do I get that next client? Or do I have enough money, while you're trying to serve your client? And those two things don't mix real well.
Yeah. And we're starting to hone in on the value of like the lifetime value of a client as well. Cause we're, you know, now, as you mentioned, we're not just trying to get somebody and work with them for 2 or 3 months. Like, we want to work with somebody long-term, like a year or two or longer if we can. And so that means that the value of that client is significantly higher the longer that we have that relationship with them, which then means that we can afford to spend more on our content creation, on our marketing, on our lead generation to get the client in the first place. And, you know, you might've heard the advice that the business that can spend the most to get a client wins, because they can like outbid their competition. You know, some of the fastest growing companies I've seen are the ones that were willing, that knew the value of their client and were willing to spend as much as they, you know, as much as they could to get that client. If you know that your clients are only worth a few $100, then it's kind of hard to pull off some marketing to get that client. You know, like you're on a really tight budget for your lead generation. And so the more value you can provide to a client, and the more you can charge, you know, that's justified by that value, the better off you are for being able to reinvest into your own business. So anyway, that was the second fundamental that we had to focus on, was just honing in on an offer and a price point that worked for our market. The third one was the sales process. You know, we didn't do a ton of, you know, awareness type marketing campaigns in our first year. Our goal was just, let's get as many calls in our calendar as possible. My goal every week was to have at least a few calls in my calendar with potential clients. And doing 30 or 40 or 50 of these calls and sending out proposals is what helped us refine the sales process, so that we knew that once we have a qualified lead and we have a scheduled call, we can expect a certain win rate on our proposal process. So now, as we're investing more in marketing now, only because our sales process is working. Like, I checked the tracking sheet we got from 2019, And, you know, we enrolled about 50% of the people we sent proposals to became clients. That's a pretty good win rate. If that was a much lower win rate, and then we try to tackle doing marketing and getting more leads and getting more calls, but there's a leaky bucket when it's, you know, time to actually sell over the phone, then all that marketing effort goes to waste. So anyway, the advice there and the lesson there was dial your sales process first, like get that dialed in before you worry about getting more attention for your business. Chuck, what's some sales tips or some proposal, you know, handing out proposal advice, anything you want to touch on? Do you want to share the way that we structured our proposal process? Because I think it came from you. Actually, the way that we've been sending out, doing calls, the two calls and the proposal, that all came from you. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, and it came from something I was doing in another business where we were trying to solve a problem where our win rate was terribly low. And we went through the wording and the structuring and, you know, the bonuses and the pricing and all of these things, and nothing worked. And one day I was just kind of thinking, well, you know, what if I was just to throw on a video recorder and just speak this proposal instead of sending them a letter? Because at the time I was sending them like a 3-page executive summary letter, which was the proposal. And the very first time I recorded a proposal as a video, that person became a client. The second time I did it, that person became a client. The third time, that person became a client. So suddenly we're looking at this going, wait a minute, we've been struggling, our win rate's been really low, but now these last three in a row have become clients. Why is that? And that was sort of the birth of the video proposal for us, and kind of a two-step process. Rather than trying to sell them on a consultation and, you know, not let them off the phone until they say yes, or until somebody, you know, says yes, or the phone gets hung up. You know, do the consultation, which I really think of as a needs analysis. Right? It's really a deep dive into what do you need? What are your goals? What do you really want to achieve? And what's preventing you from achieving that? A deep understanding, putting that into a meaningful proposal, and either delivering that through a well-worded video, or just even on a second call saying, okay, hey, look, you know, we did our homework. Here's a plan. Let me take you through the plan. Mm-hmm. And that two-step process has been a huge game changer. I think, you know, we're probably, the very first time I did it, actually, we quadrupled our win rate. And it was huge. And that is because, look, you're not just trying to get a sale when you're on that call. You're actually serving them. You're actually, you know, and my opinion is I'm okay doing 2, 3, even 4 calls with a client if that's what it takes to bring them in. And the last client that I signed really appreciated that I took a time to develop a relationship with her, understand her business before just asking for money. Because everyone out there is kind of used to, hey, buy this, or, you know, you've got this limited time offer, or you've got 24 hours to decide for this deal. And I think people are tired of it. And so you just treat them properly, right? Just treat them with some respect and don't be scared that you're going to lose a deal because you didn't keep them on the phone and ask for the deal. Right. Yeah. From my experience, that's not really been the case.
Yep. No. And you know, there's a lot of the high ticket closer type, one call close type training in the marketplace. And that might even be why a lot of service providers and coaches and consultants that are kind of like anti-sales, like, because they don't like being sold to that way. And yet they're being told that they should sell that way. So there's instant resistance there. Mm-hmm. I don't like the one call close. I don't think anybody has ever gotten me to purchase something high ticket in one call. Unless I already knew going into call that I wanted it. And then I just needed them to like explain it to me, you know, but I've never been pressured into a buying decision. I don't appreciate if that's attempted on me. And so we don't do it to others. Right. I learned that lesson in real estate. Like if you try to pressure somebody into buying a home and then they change their mind, that creates a whole lot of paperwork, man, to undo that deal. Like a painful process, right? So I learned that lesson in real estate, brought it over here, and like we've had people literally compliment the process that we took them through as we enrolled them. And yeah, in some cases it took 3 or 4 calls. I think one of the clients I enrolled took, I think it took 5 calls, because the first 2, I'm trying to, we were proposing services that they weren't quite ready for. And then they said, well, what I really need is strategies. And so then it's like, I started the process over again and took them through another set of calls where I proposed help with their strategy. And then by call 4 or 5, they ended up working with us, and I'm okay with that. You know, this is a great client that I like working with and that we'll be working with long term. So am I upset that it took 4 calls to get them? No. Like, there was no pressure, like, on either part. None of us was impulsive in deciding to work together. It was, you know, over several weeks that decision came into place. So anyway, that's component number 3, is make sure you have a sales process. For some of you, you're sending proposals. For some of you, you may be able to get some, you know, it might just be a 1-call decision thing. But if you're selling services and in several thousand dollars or you know, 5-figure kind of contracts, then there might be layers of approval that, you know, the person you're sending proposals to needs to run it by, or there could be several touch points. And if that's your process, that's your process. Just accept that, but make sure that you are tracking, like, what's your win rate in your sales process? Because once you know what that is, that becomes really, really crucial in going and tackling content marketing and advertising online, because you'll know what you can spend to get a call in your calendar or a lead on your list, or a proposal sent out. Like, you'll actually be able to break down the numbers because you know what your conversion rate in your sales process is. Anyway, the 4th component is having some kind of a funnel, some kind of a lead generation mechanism that can convert an audience into a lead or into a call on your calendar. That needs to be in place before you tackle content marketing, because if you're creating content to drive awareness, but there's no path for them to become a lead and become a client, then people making the jump from, you know, reading a blog post to becoming a client, or watching a video on YouTube to becoming a client, or, you know, that often doesn't happen. Like, you need to give them the steps to follow, to work through. So, and depending on the type of business that you have, that, you know, that funnel maybe a different format. Like, we've got a webinar, which has put some calls in our calendar, and that's worked well for us. We give away some free resources that puts emails on our email list. We do workshops in person now, in Vancouver. We've been doing a monthly workshop with potential clients, and that's gotten us a couple of clients that we've worked with. And some of our clients do different versions of that. Like, some of them have webinars to sell courses. Some of them do in-person workshops. So they're just trying to fill their workshop each month. There was another one, an electrolysis company. We set up a free assessment, right? So people can fill out this questionnaire and see if electrolysis is the right hair removal solution for them. So the type of funnel can vary, but the important thing is you need one in place. We turn away clients that want to do content marketing that don't have a process for generating leads or sales. Otherwise, it just becomes this big vanity metric where they're getting views and they're getting comments and they're getting engagement, but they're not actually getting leads or clients for their business. Chuck, is there anything you want to say about funnels? You know, before we wrap up and tell people, just remind people of all those things they need in place to prepare them for scaling up using content marketing.
Yeah, I would like to add to what you just said, because that need of having a sales process is so important. And it reminds me of a client that we just finished with recently, where our lead gen worked really well. In fact, it probably worked too well. And they were not at a stage in their business where they were prepared to do the sales work to convert those leads into customers. And so if you do lead gen, if you are investing into content marketing, but you're not set up and ready to sell, then you're, first of all, wasting money on a campaign that you're not ready for. And the second thing is, you're going to be extremely frustrated because there's all this lead flow coming in, mm-hmm. and you're not doing anything with it. I think this is why it's so important, Tyler, to what you said earlier, and that you have to be at the right stage of business. The time to invest into content marketing is when you have that foundation and you're looking to scale. If you're at the beginning, or if you're kind of desperate for cash right now and you need a quick win, content marketing is not that strategy. And because, there's, like you were saying earlier, that nurturing, that relationship building. We put out content constantly. We are doing workshops. We have emails. There's all these ways that someone who finds out about us on social media is going to get additional information from us before they ever become a client. And that there's a longer path there. It's not an immediate thing. It's not like all of a sudden they see a post on Facebook and they become a client. It would be nice if there was that magic wand, but the reality is that there really does need to be some time for relationship building. So, build that foundation first, come from a place of cash flow, and now you're ready to scale because your systems are in place and you can handle the lead flow.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the bottom line is to do content marketing and advertising online properly, at a minimum, you should probably have a couple thousand bucks a month as your marketing budget, minimum, right? For the creation of content and the running of ads. And then that's not even counting the people that you might have on your team, or that you could outsource to an agency like ours, or you could have your own freelancers and VAs and such. But the people, the people, the tools, the content, the ads, like, they all contribute to your marketing budget. And if that budget is less than a few thousand a month, then that's a sign that you shouldn't be prioritizing that stuff yet, because you can get to 10 grand a month and six figures in annual revenue just by doing some hustle. Like, get out there, build relationships with referral partners, help a couple people for free to get your first few case studies if you need to. Go do speak at some local events, go post on your social media. Half the calls I put in my calendar in 2019 just came from my personal social media. They didn't come from us, promoting videos on our Facebook page or having a YouTube channel or any of that stuff. It was just pure hustle, word of mouth, organic, focusing on putting calls in my calendar. So, that's the message that we want to leave you guys with, is if you're excited to scale your business in 2020, make sure you got the fundamentals in place first. I know the word scale is exciting. It sounds cool. And it's something that we're focused on now, but for our first year in business, we weren't. We were focused on foundations, getting a clarity on our target market, creating an offer that we knew could help them at the right price point, refining our sales process, and then setting up our lead generation system so that as we get more attention for our business, there is a process to convert that attention into leads and into clients. So I think we'll wrap up there. We wish you all the best in 2020. If you have those things in place and you're ready to start producing more content to drive more attention for your business, feel free to reach out. There's several ways that we can help you and we can work with you. And you got lots of free resources and training to help you with content marketing as well. So we'd love to hear from you. If you feel like content marketing is the thing that's going to help you scale faster and reach your goals in 2020 and beyond. And Chuck, is there anything you want to say as we wrap up this training?
I think that was extremely well said, but I think, it needs to be said. I mean, it's January 2020 here. Make sure that you have clear goals for your year and know what direction you're heading in. Don't just blindly do tasks and fulfill clients, because that's the hamster wheel. If you're doing that, you'll be doing that a year from now. You'll be doing that from 2 years from now. But make a plan. Where do you want to be in 3 months? And work back. And that's what we do. Tyler and I have strategic conversations all the time of, what are we doing? What new systems are we putting in place? What new strategies are we putting in place? And we've worked backwards from where we want to be in December. Every quarter, we know where we need to be in order to hit that goal. So work with a plan and go for it. And if you need any help from us, or if you have any questions, feel free to reach out.
Thanks so much for listening to the Influence and Scale podcast. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. And for show notes, links to resources mentioned, or to learn about how our agency can help you implement a profitable content marketing strategy, visit influenceandscale.com/podcast.